are live, and we are tonight with Brad Blair. And Brad is, let's see here, he is co-host at CreakingDoorParanormalRadio.com. And he is a co-owner at Michigan Paranormal Convention.
Yep. Guilty.
And it says owner slash janitor. That's got to suck, man. Owner slash janitor at Uper Trading Company.
You got it. Everything from the bottom up and in between, I'm there.
Nothing wrong with that, you know. It works if you can make an honest dollar at what you're doing.
That's right.
All right, so I usually start out with a question. So if people who are watching don't know you or doesn't know how to get to your Facebook page to find more out about you, my question kind of throws you in the spotlight and lets you answer however you like. And it goes like this. What got you started in the paranormal and got your interest into it?
You know, we get asked that question from time to time. My partner in all things paranormal, Tim Ellis, and I, and our third founding member of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society, which is a group we put together 20-some years back now, we grew up together. And we've been friends since the late 70s, early 80s. We went to elementary school on. And after we split up, went to college, and after we got back, we all ended up back in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and got our team going. But going back, when we were kids in the 80s, we'd ride our bikes to the library, you know, pre-internet. So we actually went and still love going to the library. we'd check out anything on ghosts and hauntings, cryptids, UFOs, anything that was strange and bizarre, we really liked. None of the three of us was one of those people that had a big paranormal experience that led them down the direction. We all kind of came by it culturally, I guess you could say. And growing up in Michigan's Upper Peninsula where we're at, you really need to have a pretty good imagination sometimes, especially back then, to really keep yourself going. And you know, there's not Broadway, there's not a lot of entertainment options. So this is what we did for fun. We'd go and we'd check out these books, and then we'd have, you know, sleepovers or be on bus trips telling ghost stories at the back of the bus, creeping the other kids out, which kind of led to, well, I guess directly led when we got a little bit older, starting to go check out those abandoned houses in the area and sneak in and places where your parents told you to stay away from. You know, don't go near there, you'll get hurt, there might be somebody drunk in there, and that kind of, you know, as long as they told you not to do it, that's exactly where you wanted to go. So we'd be doing that, and then as we hit 16 and the driver's license came, we started scouting old abandoned cemeteries in the area, which Sault Ste. Marie is Michigan's oldest city, so we've got all kinds throughout the countryside. And the next thing you know, we're driving Ouija boards out there, and some of our friends are coming. And this ends up being a weekend thing through high school where we'd have a group of 10, 12 people going out to old abandoned houses with Ouija boards and candles and doing our own little seances. So, yeah, we kind of kept – we started with that, and we kept going. And said after college, we all ended up back in the Sioux with various careers. And ended up putting our team together back in the late 90s, and it's grown from the three of us to a 10-person team now, and we've been
cool. We've
been active since I want to say 1998. So I might be off by a year, but don't quote me directly on that. But yeah, we've been going ever since, and we still love it. You know, there were no TV shows back then; it wasn't something that we jumped in on to try and find fame and fortune. Luckily, because most people in this field don't. Some find that out the hard way. But, yeah, I mean, we still, 20-some years later, we're still doing it and still loving it.
Cool. That's a pretty good story. And you got into it differently than a lot of other people. A lot of them that I talk to and ask that, they usually say they've had some sort of experience when they were younger. And something happened to them or something happened to a family member. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was never the case with us. We just, we loved it. We liked the scary stories. We were the creepy kids. and we still are.
So are you the kind that actually likes to sit down in the dark and watch scary movies then?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My so wife, not so much. So it's really something that I really love it when I get the chance now.
Which one's your favorite?
Oh, man. There's so many. I love the classics. If I had to go back, Universal's Wolfman has always been one of my favorite. And if you look at the special effects compared to today's standards.
Was that not Lon Chaney that played the Wolfman in that?
Lon Chaney Jr. Yep.
That was Lon Chaney Jr.
He was great in that. And just that whole transformation of losing yourself to this creature that you can't control and you know it's going to happen and there's nothing you can do outside of death to stop it. And that just something about that movie, I just always found a little creepy, creepier than most, I guess you could say.
You know, actually, there's one movie that I don't think they've made really any remakes of. Now, the Wolfman, they've done different remakes of that. They've done different avenues of that. Dracula, they've done different avenues of that.
Hundreds. Like that.
Whatever happened to the Creature from the Black Lagoon?
That's a good question. They made several sequels to that. I don't know that they've ever developed
I don't think they've ever tried to remake that.
Sometimes it's better they don't. A lot of the times it's better they don't.
Well, yeah, because that was a really that was a really good old classic.
Absolutely.
It's one of the greats.
All of the old Universal movies, you know, these are things that we watched Saturday afternoons on Creature Feature on WKBD 58 in Detroit.
Damn, man. You guys got Creature Feature back out here, huh? We had that in California. See, I'm originally from California.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. I'm a transplant to Wisconsin.
That's a long ways to transplant.
Well, you know, it happens whenever you meet someone that's from Wisconsin that moves your ass out here.
Yeah. Sometimes when you don't have a choice, that's the quickest route.
Biggest mistake, too.
Actually, yes and no, I have to say on that.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, it is. So in your time of doing this and everything, and I take it you've been out with cameras and taken video and pictures and stuff like that, right? And how about EVPs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So have you caught any evidence that you can actually say is evidence?
Yeah, we have from time to time. And EVPs, for whatever reason, seem to be, I don't want to say the easiest to get because we do work at it, but it seems we get more in the way of EVP evidence than we do visual. We've had some cool visual catches before, not the sacred full body apparition that's shown up. Or when we see something that we think is going that way, it's always just out of camera shot. So I really got to the point I think that's intentional. But, yeah, we've gotten some amazing EVPs that have been direct answers to our questions. It's really hard. And I mean, our group has really developed over the years, especially when the television show phase started up. You know, when Ghost Hunters hit and Ghost Adventures.
Ghost Hunters was my favorite.
We went from having 3-4 investigations a year to all of a sudden we're getting calls left and right because everybody's house was haunted. So we got to the point that one of our close friends that we brought in was the first guy that came in and joined the team is an engineer. And we said, we need Lance with this, Lance Brown. And he'll go through and he'll do basically a maintenance report on the structure we're in. Okay, this is wrong with your wiring. This is wrong with your plumbing. This is what's making you see, feel, hear this. So, I mean, we started really getting a lot more skeptical on the evidence that was brought to us. EVPs, that's the one thing that, like I say, you can always, it seems to be when we think it's something on camera, it's going to be just off camera. It's going to be just out of the shot. But some of the EVPs, they'd be really hard for people to fake, to cause to happen, I think, when we've done them. And we've had one example. We were in, it was just a local brewery, but before that, it was a gift shop on the main floor. And the second floor was, it was an old bum house for a while, but it was boarding rooms back when sailors would stop and there was a lot of transient traffic through our area.
Right.
And so this was just, it had let run down over the years. And this place, we were starting to find out, was really active. The people that called us in owned the gift shop on the main floor. And they said, you know, we've talked about having you guys here. We hear people walking. We can hear clear footsteps upstairs almost every day, and no one's up there. It's locked off. There's nothing up there. And they said, what kind of pushed us over the edge? And this is a good one coming up to the Christmas season. They had a Christmas room just dedicated year round, all Christmas decor. And they had this family of caroling dolls that ranged from, it was a brother, sister, and the parents in the old Victorian clothing. And they probably ranged from 2.5 feet to about 4 feet tall. They were sizable. So the women working would come in the morning, and the girl, the sister or daughter of this four-person family group, would be moved around the store in different places. And they would check, and the security system was set at night, hadn't been disarmed. Mm-hmm. Well, they finally got scared enough that they started taking her and putting her in the basement and putting a box over her at night, and then they'd come back in and actually display her. Well, the girl came in the morning before they called us, opened up, went to go to the basement to get the girl doll out, and on the top step going to the basement, facing inwards at her, was this girl doll. She screamed, went over there, would not come back in the store. They gave her the day off. She would not come back in that day. They checked their security system. Nobody had been in there overnight. They couldn't explain it. So they finally, that was kind of the last straw. They called us in. And so we set up, and yeah, we were going through all this, and we started doing an EVP session. And this being, it was a rough area back in the day, and a lot of sailors, a lot of tradespeople coming through. One of the questions was, what are you, a captain? Thinking that it was somebody off the ship. And it came across as no fisherman, something along that lines. Well, we thought that doesn't make a lot of sense. So we went back through, and we're kind of reviewing, but we got a couple other direct answers off of this. And it was the same gravelly man's voice. Well, I ended up doing some research for a different case at Whitefish Point Lighthouse that we were working on up in Paradise, Michigan, which also houses a Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum. And it's a place we've done a few times as well. But I'm reading through some of the history on that, and I find out there was a whole fishing fleet that had been right off the point back in the 19-teens, 20s, probably before that too. Mm-hmm. One of the people who had originally ran this building when it was put up. It was a downtown. So the upstairs was a boarding house. The main floor was just some of the top shops in the downtown, large building. And it was at one point, a really nice area. It is again now too. But we found out that it was the son from this family that owned this whole fishing operation was actually sent in to run this whole operation when they started it up. So it was kind of cool when the two cases came together and we had some validation, possible validation on that EVP, that may in fact have been the person that we were speaking to. And they came through several times that night. And yeah, there's something about EVPs that still sends a chill up my spine when it hits you right out of nowhere. You know, when you listen to it for hours sometimes, and you've just got nothing but listening to yourself ask questions and the other people
listening to the static that comes out, you know, the dead noises there.
Yeah. And so, then you get that one bang, all of a sudden there's a voice there that shouldn't be, and there's your validation.
But that's a validation, and then it also makes you excited, and you feel that, yeah. It's like being an adrenaline junkie. You feel that adrenaline.
Absolutely.
When you have that there.
We've always compared this to an extreme sport, and none of us on the team are very athletic. So this is our adrenaline shot, is when we're out in the field and something like that happens.
Yeah, it is really cool when it does. So the place that you're talking about there, they have a security system, which is based probably what, just an alarm system. They don't have cameras.
They didn't at the time. This was probably 15 years back.
Okay.
and they didn't have the camera system in there at the time. The last time we'd investigated, we've done several investigations on this building, and I could go into story after story on this place. It was just that active. But they had the alarm system, but they didn't have a camera system at the time. The last time we did, they had the camera system in there. Unfortunately, the Caroling dolls, they sailed off. They couldn't keep having them there. They ended up selling them, I think, to a local bank cheaply. So got those out of there. But they'd still hear the footsteps. They would still see mists out of the corner of their eyes. And we did several, and we had... So it's very uncommon, at least in our experience, to find a place that you can go into and have experiences almost every time you investigate. And this was one of maybe three or four that we've had that happen over the 20-some years we've been at it.
That's pretty cool. So that means that building has a lot of history to it.
A lot of energy
buildup in it.
Absolutely.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. So, did you find out any information on those dolls?
We didn't. In fact, my partner Tim from the team just put out a Facebook post trying to find out where they're at now, and trying to see. We just had our first book come out last year, Upernatural Haunts, and we wrote about it. This was one of the stories that was in the book, and a few people had messaged us with that exact question: whatever happened to that doll? And well, you know, we can try and find out. We knew it was at one point, they believed it was at a local bank. So we're trying to track it down now and see if there was anything with the doll that they may have had some other experiences. My guess is it's actually the location. So I don't usually think, and I don't want to say no objects can have energy attached to them. But I think I think it was the location. The location itself had so much going on.
Well, see, that's why I was asking, you know, because objects do have stuff attached to them. They do have energies attached to them. That's why I like sometimes going into some of these next to new shops and some of the antique shops and just kind of looking around. I'll just walk around just looking at the stuff that's there, because some of it is just fascinating to see what it is.
Absolutely. And to try and guess the history, if you start piecing, if there's any provenance with some of the things in antique or secondhand shops that you can piece together old owners, and I know exactly what you're saying. It's almost a treasure hunt.
Yeah, it is. It's very much so. But see, that's why whenever you're telling me this story, the thing I'm thinking, you know, I'm seeing this in my mind is about these dolls. You know, what's the history behind these dolls? Is the entity moving these dolls, is it something that's attached to that one doll? Or is it something that's in the building, you know, like an entity in the building that's an intelligent haunt that's causing the movements?
We had enough other evidence in this place that I'm fairly convinced that everything we were dealing with was intelligent. It interacted with us enough. We as I said, I could go on with stories and stories about this place. It's on the oldest street in the oldest city in the state of Michigan. So there's a lot of history.
In the upper peninsula, right?
Right. And before Europeans arrived, this was the exact slip where it's at was part of an old Native American fishing village on top of that. So
that's even thousands. Better history there.
Absolutely. You can go back thousands of years on that strip.
Oh, hell yeah. There's more energy there now by that description than what I thought there was originally.
This entire block that it's on, and it's mainly, we call it the bar block in the Sioux. Anyone that's been through Sioux St. Marie knows what I'm talking about, because every other building on this block is a bar, just about. and
damn, man, that sounds like down here in Wisconsin.
Very close.
Down Madison. Just go down State Street. You'll find about two or three bars on every block.
Perfect. and I love driving through Wisconsin because I see the old Blatt signs hanging out, and I'm a Blatt connoisseur myself. So,
please.
Believe it or not, there are a few of us. But, we've investigated, I want to say, five different buildings on this same block. And we've caught activity in every one except one, and the people that own it so skeptical that I believe them when they tell me that they are having these things happen. I think it didn't happen for us that night, as happens a lot of the time when you're in the field. You can't just snap your fingers have things appear. So,
well, there's been many a times we've been out, or I've been out, I don't, and Joe's been out with me a couple of times, where we're hoping to catch something, but nothing ever happens.
Yeah, that's the thing with this field that I think really when the TV craze started up, I can remember calling Tim saying, hey, you're not going to believe this. I just saw a commercial on Sci-Fi. They're doing a show about what we do called Ghost Hunters. Mm-hmm. And he said, you're shitting me. I said, I just saw the commercial. And kind of laughed, and he said, well, that's not going to last the season because it's so boring a lot of nights. You set up, you sit there, and 9 out of 10 times, nothing happens. But through the magic of editing, all of the shows have great activity, and that kicked it off. But you had so many teams start up right off of the whole Taps. You know, when they hit their fame on Ghost Hunters, and so many teams started up just repeating what they were doing on their shows. And then a year later, you say, well, we're the guys from Black Shirt Paranormal. Well, they're not around anymore. Well, no.
I watched some of those shows just to laugh.
I don't watch
just
many.
For a good laugh.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
I mean, especially those guys that's got what's his name, Bobo from the Bigfoot, Bigfoot research. Those guys in search
finding
of Bigfoot,
finding
Bigfoot.
How
does he know what they eat? You know, I mean, he's like, they eat what I eat. You know, I get a kick out of the guy. He's hilarious.
I've gotten to know Bobo over the years through the Paracon and through different various events. Him and Cliff Brackman from that show. Cliff's a very smart guy. Bobo's a very fun guy. He's some of the stories this guy has you wouldn't believe coming out of anybody else's mouth. But he's an old California surfing hippie is what he is. They don't portray him that way on the show so much. He's a great guy. It's funny. One of
Bobo.
Bobo.
He's Bobo. He's the last of a dying breed.
Oh, that makes sense.
He used to live outside of Hollywood.
Oh my god.
Funny, we were doing
that. I probably should have realized that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they make him up a lot more than he's a riot. If you ever get a chance to sit and have a couple drinks with that guy, he is hilarious. I was thinking because I was said I was having trouble getting my computer going to hop on with you guys sometime and it brought back the memory. Tim and I had Bobo and Cliff on Creaking Door one night. And it's before I really knew the guys. So I'm going through their booking agent and getting this hooked up for the show. It was a promotion. They were coming into Michigan Paracon for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting in the studio and nobody's calling in. So I get a hold of their agent. I said, Lee, I said, what's going on with Cliff and Bobo? We're not hearing anything from them. So, well, I warned you, Bobo, you might not hear from. You never know with him. He's so erratic. He said, Cliff doesn't miss a call in ever. Well, right after that, Cliff calls in. Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I passed out on my couch. I was napping, and I've never missed this. And he's completely, 100% on his game going. Then the other line rings. Hey, this is Bobo. Can you guys hear me okay? Kind of laugh. We said, yeah, you're clear. Well, I'm sitting in an oil change right now getting my truck done. Can I call you back in a little bit? We're like, we can hear you fine. I'll call you back in 10 minutes. Well, 40 minutes later, we're getting finished up with Cliff, and here comes Bobo zinging in again. So we just sat and laughed. It was one of the funnest interviews we've done, and so erratic. But those guys, they really are great guys. But I don't know, and I guess I give them credit because they did keep viewership up. I don't know how you can go – I mean, at least with ghost hunting, there's different histories. You've got – look. You've got stories behind it and you're building on a backstory. So right. I can see how you can keep some of those shows going. But going out in the woods on every episode, knocking on trees trying to find Bigfoot, they kept that going a lot longer than I ever thought that show would.
Yeah, it's just the way they portrayed. I guess it's the unique and crazy shit they pulled out there, you know? I mean, stereo through a big speaker, you know, parties out in the woods.
If you didn't have Bobo on there telling you what they ate, you wouldn't have much of a show.
Probably not.
You wouldn't have much of a show there. That was he was the comic relief that they needed to keep viewership, I think.
Exactly.
But he honestly is hilarious to sit one-on-one and BS with the guy. Oh.
I can just imagine.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. No, the Bigfoot thing, it's interesting because where we're at, as I said, we were the creepy kids growing up. Mm-hmm. And once we started getting a little more in the way of being the professional creepy kids, we started getting calls for things along the line of cryptid sightings. There have been a rash of dogman sightings west of here, UFO sightings and things, because people just lumped everything in and threw it at us. So we went out on a couple occasions looking for evidence on Bigfoot claims, didn't find anything. But I could say we went out, we didn't really have any experience at all, nor do we much now. Something we studied a little bit more on, I guess, but we didn't spend all night out in the woods knocking trees. We've since made friends with some other groups that specialize in that. So that we can field off some cryptid calls now and field off the UFO stuff to MUFON. But man, we got some wild stories over the years just of people calling in. And these people are sincere. You know, most of them are not trying to screw with you, and you can usually tell when they are. Mm-hmm. But people are seeing something in the woods or seeing something in the sky, and they want to, a lot of them don't even want validation. They want to talk to somebody about it, and they want
to tell their story.
Exactly. Exactly.
They have a story and they want it to come out. That's what it mostly is.
Yep.
Most of them you can tell just by their body language if they've seen something or if they're trying to pull your leg.
Oh, absolutely. You know?
I mean, I was good at reading people for a very long time. It's like a hidden talent. That plus I used to be a security private investigator and stuff.
Okay.
So worked for the public for a very long time.
One of my favorite, I guess I wouldn't even say consulted on, but it was a case, a friend of ours that had a older regional haunting book out, got a phone call one day from a guy. He was a state trooper in Lower Michigan, and he'd been bear hunting in the Western Upper Peninsula. And he had this experience, and he had to tell somebody about it, but he didn't dare talk about it at work. He didn't want people to know about it because he'd get harassed by the guys, naturally.
Right.
And this was probably, again, 12, 13 years ago. So he contacted this friend of ours, and she said, well, it's kind of outside of anything that I've ever really investigated. Let me put you in touch with my friend Brad. So this trooper called me, and he said, I feel kind of funny just telling you. He said, I don't dare tell anyone at work. I don't talk to my family about it. He said, I got up and went outside the camp in the middle of the night to take a leak. And he said, my car was probably, I want to say, he said, 15, 20 yards out. And there's a light that's just circling it, steady, staying at the same stretch, going around it. And he said, I stepped towards it and it stopped. And as I started to walk over, because he said, I thought it was somebody with a flashlight going around the car, but he said it was eerie, just a steady pace it kept. And he said, as I walked over towards it, it shot up in the air across to the tree line and right up above the trees and was gone. And I said, that sounds a little more UFO activity than we're into. But I sat and the guy didn't, I said, I can get you in contact with some people from MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, or some other people that I know in the state, if you don't want to go to an official person along that line, that's going to want to write the report and all. He said, no. He said, you know, I just wanted to talk to somebody that deals with strange phenomena. He said, I don't want it reported. I don't really want this written down. He said, I just need to get it off my chest. So he said, I don't know what the hell happened. He said, I've been a state cop for years. I've seen all kinds of shit. And he said, this was beyond my comprehension. And that's, he just wanted to talk to somebody about it that wasn't going to ridicule him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, those people are also credible witnesses because they're used to seeing all kinds of weird shit.
Oh, hell yeah.
And they're trained to really
take sort of
every detail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, this guy was very sincere. He at first I wondered if it wasn't somebody pulling my leg, but no, when I got talking to him, he was so quiet to start with, and then as the story built, you could kind of hear the fear in his voice recounting this. So
yeah, he just wasn't sure. He didn't know what the hell he seen.
He had no idea, and it was very obvious. And he say you, I think we've gotten to the point now in society that people accept a little bit more that science doesn't know everything. We don't know what all's out there. We don't know.
True.
If there's life beyond death right now, where at one point, I mean, when we started, we told people that we were going out ghost hunting, that somebody called us to do a paranormal investigation. Most people would look at us like we had two heads. And you're doing what? You're spending your weekend where? And I think that was one of the things that a lot of the television shows, and they're a double-edged sword, as we've talked about a little bit, but one of the good things I think to come out of that is it's not as much of a taboo subject anymore. I think the paranormal in general.
No, they've made it more acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back when I was a kid or when I was younger and dabbling in all that stuff. See, I used to practice Wicca. I used to be a practicing Wiccan, and I had friends that were into that too. We never really created a coven or anything like that, but we did practice it and know a lot about it. So I have experience in that part of it, plus also I have experienced other things like the UFO phenomenons and the spirits and stuff like that. So I kind of understand it. And then, yes, back whenever I was younger doing all this, it wasn't widely accepted.
Well, then you're just worshiping the devil.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what people were thinking it was, that it was devil mm-hmm. worship, and it's not.
No.
Wicca and paganism are similar in aspect, and they're both natural-based. They're both based as a religion or a belief in the in nature itself
mm-hmm.
and the things in nature.
Yeah, and it's just not the acceptable... Well, Christian religion or Judaism, anything in the UP or the US, you know, that people expect, it's a fringe. You know, there's nothing different to a point. You're asking a higher power to hear your thoughts and to grant something to you. It's the same in any religion. It's the basis of, but it freaks people out because you're practicing witchcraft. Well, I've seen all the movies.
That's the main problem right there is the movies. They hyped it so much and they twisted it so much that it made it become a taboo.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And good. So you had to do everything in secret or behind doors or stuff like that. In fact, you have two Ouija boards there behind you.
Absolutely.
And those right there, those are part of paganism and Wiccan.
And again, that's something that was bastardized by the movies.
Yes, it was.
A good friend of mine, Robert Murch, is the head of the Talking Board Historic Society. He knows more about Ouija boards than anybody in the nation. In fact, I've got an interview with him on Friday for a project I'm working on. He'll tell you, the Ouija was never, it was a parlor game to a point. You know, back during the age of spiritualism, it was big, but it was never considered evil back then. It was never, he said, if I remember correctly, I want to say he said it may have been the Kennard Novelty Company. They were the ones that first produced the Ouija boards, that at one point they gave a ton of money to local churches, one specific religion that they were involved with. And at some point they cut off giving the funds to them. And all of a sudden, well, you're messing with the devil.
That board is evil.
Exactly. Exactly. Don't quote me on that, but I know that it was one of the original, I don't think it was Fold, I think it was the Kennard family that happened with. And then when The Exorcist came out, you know, that's what really pushed it back to the side of being a strong occult symbol.
Right.
You know, and you just don't mess with it.
Well, if memory serves me correctly, I do believe that the modern day Ouija board that Parker Brothers puts together, which is a novelty item, but that modern day board is based loosely on what is originally called the witch board.
There were different forms of the talking board. There were tables that were carved out for this, and it had so many different loose versions, I guess, before they really took it and Kennard's put it into this form, and that's kind of the standard that you see today. And man, those old ones, you talk about some money. Those things. I've got a couple old antique ones from the 19 teens that I paid a little bit of money for, but I know some of the original ones, you're talking upwards of $1,000 if you can get your hands on the first runs. But it just shows how big it's gotten to be into our culture. It's not the party game, it's not the occult object, but it's somehow it's the one thing that's really kind of infused both and is so much acceptable to one group in society and still damned by another group.
So you guys, I remember early on here you said something about you guys use these boards.
When I was when we were young, we did. I'll never take a board out because you can't substantiate anything off of it, obviously. You know, somebody pushed it, somebody did this. I had some very strange experiences, let's just say, when I was in high school age, that really did make me think there were times we were channeling something through it. One of my favorite stories was a friend of mine and I, we were doing an impromptu seance. We used to do this after school. You know, the parents weren't home, we'd go grab a board, and you know, some kids would go out and play catch. We were in a dark room with a Ouija board. There were a few of us that would, but we were killing about a half hour. So we've got to be over at this football game, meet some people there. Let's just do a quick Ouija session. So we sat down and we got this spirit that we believed we were in contact with on several occasions. And so we were doing our session and thought, it's been about 15 minutes. Let's break it off. Well, we broke it off and somehow an hour and a half had gone by, just shy of an hour and a half. So no way in hell, that clock's got to be off. Go check the other ones, and needless to say, we were quite late for the game, but we were blown away because we had all of this missing time. You know, I know we get absorbed in it, but not that much. I mean, we didn't, maybe a dozen questions and maybe a 15-minute session, but it was way beyond that. That still kind of creeps me out to this day. I've never been able to rationalize that experience away.
Well, I've known people that have had some experiences. I had a guy that I was friends with for a while that was in the military, and he said that's how they passed their time, you know, when they had free time and stuff and they needed to, you know, horse around or whatever. He said they did a Ouija seance in one of the rooms. And they were trying their damnedest to get something to communicate with them, and one of the guys that was using the board, he was sitting right next to him. He said the guy turns his head, looks off, and says, "I don't give a shit what comes out. I just want to have something come out." And he said all of a sudden the board started going crazy, where the pointer started going just nuts, and someone started saying some stuff to him that they didn't agree with. And then he said one of the people got up and slammed their hand down on the board and said, no more, I'm done. And he said ever since that point, that spot where the board was sitting in that room, no matter how much you had the heater on, you could walk past that and it would be a cold spot, like 10 to 15 degrees colder in that specific spot. And he said after, and then also that they had weird activities happening in that room after that.
And we love stories like that. So, whether it's
whether it's real or not.
Yeah.
That's how he was saying it. So.
Yeah. No. Whether it's actually something paranormal happening or it just got into the psyche and convinced this person that this is what happened and this is causing it. Yeah, those are the stories we thrive on.
Oh yeah, those are the stories we like to hear.
Because it creeps.
Right, those are the creepy ones. Those are the ones that just kind of gets to you.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
You know, one of the things I find too that for the paranormal, whether it's with cryptids or with the UFOs or the spirits or demons or whatever, for people like us to really get into it and enjoy it and to be there with it, we need to have a really vivid and good imagination to really comprehend all the differences in the things that are out there.
I think it's a combination of imagination and an open mind. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people from a young age get told these don't exist, this can't happen, and they block that in. And that's what they're brought up on. And I was one of those. My friends were too. Our parents always, well, that's there's no such thing as ghosts. Why are you bothering? I'm 47. My mother still asks me, when are you going to get over this ghost stuff? Well, probably not a very good chance at this point in life, Mom. But
not after some of the stuff you've found, right?
Exactly. You know, some of the experiences we've had, so it's not really something that we want to step away from anyway. I mean, this is, some people golf. This is what I do for pleasure. So,
hey, this is the fun part of it. That's how I look at it. It's a lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely.
So, in the 20 some odd years you've been doing this, have you ever discovered that maybe that anybody has told you that their children have seen something where they haven't, or have had a situation where their children were like holding a conversation with what the parent thought was an imaginary friend?
Absolutely. It's hard to deal with cases with children, and it still is. I mean, to this day, because you have to keep a very objective mind. You have to be skeptical. As I said, you've got to be open-minded too. With the kids, you know, is it an imaginary friend or are things happening? And sometimes this is where we'll call in friends that have some psychiatric experience that can, you know, maybe sort a few things out for us. But you don't want to go in and believe everything a kid says, obviously. But at the same time, if you discount it all, and just because the parents say, well, we're not seeing something, but the kid might be, well, yeah, there's a possibility. The obvious problem with that is we're going in as adults, so we're not going to see it. So unless we can pick up some type of an energy formation or get something, you know, in the way of solid evidence, be it an EVP or something that we can record or measure, then if it's just a kid seeing something, it's a kid seeing something. And if it's not harming the child, is it really an issue? You know, that comes into play. But there's a lot in the way of ethics that fall into that area of research too, where you're dealing with somebody's children and do they need, and there's cases where, you know, some of these kids might just need some mental health. And that's very difficult to go to a parent and say, you know, your child's kind of showing signs of this, and it's a lot of people don't want to believe that naturally. But it's even with adults now, the don't take away my ghost response, we call it. You know, where we'll go in and we'll explain everything away that they've given us, you know, whether it be from something wrong with the home. One of my favorite cases, to use it as an example, and it is kind of sad, but the lady was fine with it afterwards. She just didn't accept what we told her. Nice little old lady calls us down to her house. It's about an hour out into the country. She's doing an antique store, and her living room is covered in antiques. So we're like, this is, for atmosphere-wise, this is great. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got all of these old antiques into this room. One corner of the room has her husband's ashes in an urn. The other corner has her mother's ashes in an urn. In with all this. So we thought, man, if there's such a thing as attachment energy, this is the perfect place for it.
Oh, yeah.
So we were there for the night, and absolutely nothing happened, as is the case often. Recorded everything. We said, well, her biggest claim was her husband was shaking her bed and waking her up every night between 3 and 4 a.m. Okay. So we said, would you mind if we let our cameras roll overnight? We'll drive back down in the morning, pick them up, and then we can review the footage. Nope, no problem. I would like some explanation to this. Well, she already had the explanation in her head. It was her husband that was waking her up every night. Mm-hmm. We got the cameras back. We reviewed the footage, and you'd see her leg would start to rise and crash back down. It did this two or three times, and she finally startled herself awake, and you could see her get up and look around. Well, that was her husband waking her up. One of our members happens to run a physical rehabilitation center here for our local hospital, and he said, well, this is restless leg syndrome. Yep. He said, it's textbook case. That's exactly what's happening.
I was just thinking that.
Yep. So we went back to her with this, and oh, no. No, that's why would you guys say this? And we're showing her the video. He's walking her through it. He says, I can see where you're starting to get restless. You're not sleeping well. And then bang, this. That's not what's causing this. And at that point, you just, well, this is our finding. You know, we really, unless you have objects flying off shelves or hearing voices, other things, your main report is you're getting woken up at night by what you think is spirit energy. And what we're finding is it's something natural entirely. So it's hard to deal with people like that. It's heartbreaking sometimes, because we've had other cases where it's been, what one of the worst, I think, is the lady's kids were complaining about scratching in the walls, and they weren't able to sleep, and the dog was barking, and we went in and we set up our cameras, and about an hour in, I heard one of our guys who was on monitor duty yell out at the homeowner, hey, do you have any other pets in here? And we kind of, me and the other guy that were doing a work on the next level at the top of the stairway, no, well, I just saw two big brown things run by the camera in the basement while they had rats infested in the house.
Oh, man.
And that's what these kids were being terrorized every night, because
the rats were
was running through their rooms and they could hear scratching in the walls. Mm-hmm. Well, you need an exterminator, not paranormal researcher. So okay. Unfortunately, those things come up too. But at that point, it was, you know, case closed. Let's pack up and hit last call. So it happens. You know, it happens more often than not. We usually do find something to explain away at least part of what we get reported. It's the cases where you can't explain it that keep you going back.
Oh yeah. And then, you know, you just want to know what you can catch.
Absolutely.
That's, you know,
I said our big visuals seem to be just off camera. And one story that we tell often when we're speaking publicly, and it's still to this day one of my favorites, is we were at Sichua Point Lighthouse on Northern Lake Michigan, right on the belly of the Upper Peninsula. Very rural lighthouse. It's, you're driving down a dirt road to what seems like the middle of nowhere. Well, the main ghosts, there's several, and we've been told this by the Historical Society of Gulliver that runs it, that they believe there are several different entities there. And we've come to believe it over the years. We've investigated there many times. And the main ghost is Captain Joseph Willie Townsend, an old lightkeeper. And he's been spotted by numerous people there, at least a person that matches his character. It has been seen on the ground, seen in the house. But Captain Townsend liked to smoke cheap cigars, and his wife would have nothing to do with it. So he was always made to go outside to smoke the cigars. And one of the main stories is people encounter cigar smoke throughout the lighthouse. So we got set up for this one investigation. We had the cameras all going, ready, and we said, let's just go outside. We brought some cheap cigars, lit them up, and the whole team's standing outside of the house. So this is for you, Captain Townsend. We salute you, and we hope you will join us tonight. So we all take puffs off our cigars, and none of us smoke cigars, so we're out there choking. And one of the guys looks and says, "Did you just see someone walk by that window?" And one of the guys, Tim, on the team said, "I did." And he said, "What do you see?" And he said, "Well, it looked like a dark, shadowy figure." Well, as soon as he says that, the next set of windows, the curtain pulls back really slow, and there's this just dark, dark black figure that kind of looks like he's peering out the window at us, and then slowly the curtain closes again. Well, we had complete control of the place. We knew nobody else was in there.
Nobody was in there, yeah.
So it's, "Holy shit, did you see that? Did you see that?" And the whole team goes down, and we got to get in there. Well, I don't want to go in there first. What was that? So it was one of those things that we were so excited because we were certain it was going to be on camera, and we got back in, and wouldn't you know, the window that it got pulled across from was just maybe a foot and a half outside of view. And
just out of frame.
This was a while ago before we had wider angle. I'd love to go with the new equipment that we have nowadays that we could really, really cover the whole place. And
yeah.
We did just get informed they're doing some remodeling, and they have to tear a couple walls out in the spring, and they want us to come in and investigate while they're doing that and see if it stirs up any extra activity.
It's a good possibility it might, especially if it's all connected to the building itself.
And there I think it is. There I think it is. It's we call it our Disneyland. We've investigated at least half a dozen times, and it's another one of those places that every time we go, we walk away with something we can't explain. And it's finally gotten to the point that we've just said, you know, this place is haunted. And there aren't many that will flat out come out and say, you know, there's no two ways about it. You know,
have you guys tried to remedy your big catches that are off camera by setting up other cameras and like crossing the view?
We've talked about, we have in some investigations now where if it's a bigger open space, like with the lighthouse, as an example, we're running cable, we're trying to cover all these small rooms. So there's not a lot of, without completely ignoring another section of the area, there's not a lot you can do unless you're bringing in a whole second DVR system, X amount of cameras, and spend all night hooking them up at the time they were all cable. So we spent more time running cables and tearing it all down at the end of the night than we did investigating sometimes, it seemed like anyway. We switched over. We finally got a good solid wireless system that we're happy with. So it speeds things up a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we've got matching cameras. And then the latest investigation we did was on Halloween up in Grafton with another crew that was up there. And the upstairs part is a yoga studio, so it's a fairly large area.
Okay.
And he had his camera set up pointing one direction. And so since we didn't need both cameras, I took my camera and put it on the tripod and set it the other direction. So we kind of had the whole hall covered that way.
Right.
And then we used Joe's camera as walking around. My daughter was with us at the time and was using it to film when we did our walkthroughs and stuff.
Well, the more
that's one of the suggestions, you know, if it's ever possible to do it.
Oh, absolutely. No, the more area you can cover, the better. And if you get wide open like that, we did the night before Halloween for 20 years, 21 years now, we've done a live show with a radio station in the area. And this has been our kind of, we call it our Super Bowl. You know, this is our big investigation. We always try and find a large location, something that at least has an interesting history to talk on, but we can run nonstop while we're doing this. So we have an old ice arena in Sault Ste. Marie that was built, I believe, around 1941. And they'd had some activity going on. Different people had told us about this over the years. So we hit that this year, and it's nice to have that big open space because exactly what you just talked about. You know, we can put a camera up here, we can put one up here, and you can cover all of that space without missing out on anything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the more you can cover and the more you can take back, the better. I said, for us, for some reason. And I've talked to other investigators that have said the same thing. Things seem to happen just off camera. So they know what they're doing.
It always seems that way. It really does always seem that way.
Or when you don't have one and you least expect it, you know.
Exactly. You know, or right after you turn the cameras off.
Well, mm-hmm. We were driving down a highway once, and I've lived in Wisconsin all my life. Okay. I've seen every creature there is that naturally lives here. Right? And we were driving down the highway coming back home from Madison or somewhere, and we saw this bird, and I don't know what it was, but it wasn't anything from here, and it had a wingspan on it that was as wide as the road sign that was, like, telling you what ramps were, you know, this is this way, you know. It was one of those multi-signs.
The big, long signs.
The really big, long, green signs over the highways, you know.
I've read stories about Thunderbird sightings in Wisconsin and along the Lake Michigan, all along the shoreline, really.
I wish I would have had a camera that day, because I was like, and that's all I could talk about after that, because I couldn't get that thing out of my mind after that for a couple of days. It's like,
and that's when you don't have a camera in your hand.
Yep. That's right.
Well, I called him crazy. I said, you just seen one of those damn turkey vultures.
No, I used to see those all the time on my way back and forth.
But no, what he was actually describing to me, it actually sounded like the California Golden Condor.
A little bit outside of California, though.
Yeah, a lot outside of California, but still, I mean, that's kind of how, that was the first bird that I pictured at that time. The way he was explaining it to me, because the California Condor, that sucker's wingspan is just enormous.
I've got another, Tim and I have a book that was supposed to be out this last summer, and it's going to be on Great Lakes region. It's Great Lakes Mysteries and Monsters. And we really delve a lot more into the cryptid side of things on this one. Mm-hmm. And with COVID, it slowed everything down, and our editor it's coming soon. It's coming soon. It's coming soon. We were really hoping to have it for Halloween, then we were hoping for Christmas, and now I think it's going to be a New Year's release. But I was interviewing a lady in southern Michigan who swears, and this is another one of those stories where it's like, I don't want to be ridiculed, but I know what I saw. Mm-hmm. She swears that she has had a pterodactyl land in her backyard several years in a row. Like, and it's around the same time. And we talked for a good half hour, and she said it. And I asked her everything I could think of. Could it be this? Could it be that? No. It had long, leathery wings. It landed in this one huge tree on the property line. She said the first time I saw it, I wasn't sure what it was because there was a lot more brush. The next time, some of the limbs had been cut, and she said I could see it. And she said, people think I'm crazy when I bring this up. And I said, you know, I can see why people might say that. But this same type of thing has been reported throughout the U.S. Mm-hmm. and right through modern times. And you can find account after account of this. But at the same time, she sees it once, I believe she said towards the spring, and then she doesn't see it again for the rest of the year. So it almost seems like it's a migratory pattern. And these things pop up, and in rural areas of Michigan, there's a lot of woodland for something to hide.
Yep. Well, so, well, up there in
anything's
Michigan,
possible, you know.
Yeah.
In
Michigan, you have the Michigan Dogman.
Absolutely.
You know, there's reports
which is
of that.
Comparable to the Beast of Bray Road.
Comparable to the Beast of Bray Road down here.
Yeah, Linda Godfrey's a good friend, and we've chatted quite a bit.
I'm still trying to get her on here.
Still trying to get in touch with her to get her on here with us.
Linda's not always easy to get into. I'll always hear back from her, but sometimes it takes a week or two to get a reply to an email from her or a text. So nice, really nice lady, very nice lady, and. You talk about sharp, and she was never into the whole cryptid side of things until really the whole Beast of Bray Road thing came up. She was a journalist. That really put her over the
edge. And I'll guarantee you this. If she's seen some of the pictures that Lee Hample has that we've seen, that's what got her. That is what captured her attention and brought her into it.
Yeah.
Because we spent 8 hours down there with Lee and we're set on this property. And we've got all this stuff. And I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do with it, but we've got so much footage.
I know what
for
we're going to do with it, but you know, I'm keeping
it. And we want to go back. We have an open invitation with Lee to go back and do an overnight investigation on his property. So
riddle me this. Are they still having sightings in that area now?
Yes.
Well, all right. Hold on a second. Let's end this. All right, because we're past 7 o'clock.
No, I wanted to ask him one more quick thing.
All right, you ask him one more quick thing, but before we talk too much about Bray Road, we're going off the air.
No. Well, if you got time, stick around after we're done, and we'll talk more about Bray Road with you. But
sure,
where you're located in the Upper Peninsula there, how close are you to the Boundary Waters?
We're on the far east end. I literally, the trees are all bare now. I can look out my window and see Canada where we're at. But we're right at the end of Lake Superior on the far east end. We're way over here.
So you're way up at the top over by the lake itself.
Absolutely, yep.
Yeah, okay. I've been up through Superior and up into Minnesota and about halfway up to Canada. Making deliveries for a company I worked for at the time. So
when the borders open, we go to Canada on a regular basis for dinner, movies. I mean, it's literally
that's cool.
Minutes from my house.
That is really freaking cool.
it is, and hopefully we get back to that point soon after.
Yeah.
Oh yes, that would be so nice.
Amen.
So anyway, is there any anything else you want to throw at us? Any websites, any upcoming events, anything like that going?
If you want to get in touch with me, Facebook's probably the best, just Brad Blair. You can hit me up at MI Paracon. The Facebook page is Michigan Paranormal Convention. We're also on Twitter. Okay. MIParacon.com is the website. We keep updating that. Hopefully it's going to happen. It's not until the end of August. We had to postpone it from last year, obviously, because of the COVID and all large gatherings being pushed back. But
I know some are going virtual.
Yeah, and we got a phone call from a production company that actually wanted us to go virtual, and we went back and forth on it. And we've always been such a hands-on event that people get one-on-one time with their favorite celebrities, authors, investigators. That, you know, it's just not the same. And I know there's a market for it, but I don't want to go down that road. So we decided to roll everything over to next year, and hopefully we're back to our home venue at Kuwaitin Casino here in Sault Ste. Marie by the end of August, and everybody's healthy and happy and be giving hugs again and just enjoying the weekend as it's meant to be.
That'd be cool.
That's our big one. We've got a couple other smaller events we're working on, but nothing that's set in stone that I can put out there right now. But if you check up with the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society, the UPPRS, again on Facebook, we usually check up on that page at least every couple days, and you can hit us up there too. And we do cover pretty much the entire Upper Peninsula and northern lower Michigan if you're looking for investigations. There's some people, as I said, just want to chat and just might want some consulting, and we're good with that too. So you're always welcome to hit us up free of charge. You know, we don't, that's usually the first thing that comes up. What do you guys charge to come and investigate? Nothing. You know, we still try to be discreet about what we do, and we're not in it for the money. If we were, we would have went bankrupt long ago.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So, your Creaking Door podcast,
yep.
Do you want to
Creaking Door Paranormal Radio? Yep, that's on Spotify. Our home base is slackjawpunks.com, but the Creaking Door, we try to do bi-monthly. It's ended up being, especially this past year with everything going on, cut back to about monthly, but we get some of the biggest names from the paranormal reality shows, authors, just anybody with anything to do with the strange and creepy, we like to get on and put on our show. It's an hour-long show, and yeah, It's any place you get podcasts, really. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. We're out there. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook, of course.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right, Joe.
All right. Don't forget to check us out at utterlyinsaneproductions.com. You'll find all our links there.
Cool.
And we'll see you Friday
again. Thanks, guys. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Fred.
All right. Stay safe.